coming up on podcast 1381. Your answers to question of the week, a few listener emails, and your Patreon thanks. Stick around. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. It's EV News Daily. Second one for today, Sunday 20th of February. My name is Martin Lee, and today we are reading out your answers to question of the week with emobilitynorway.com. This week I've been asking you about performance in electric vehicles. I've never driven an EV that I thought wasn't brilliant to drive and fun, and some are more powerful than others, but all EVs have that little kick of power, far more than, well, the average combustion car, the average priced combustion car, where you put your foot down, you set your stopwatch, you come back a week later, and it starts to accelerate a little bit faster. Okay, I'm exaggerating for effect, but you know what I mean. And I was asking you what performance means to you in the buying decision when you're purchasing an EV, because they recently slowed down the Model Y standard range. 0-60 got worse by 1.5 seconds. And I didn't really see anybody complaining about that, like Tesla fans used to complain about other EVs because they weren't as quick as Tesla, and now that Model Ys are slower than their competitors, they've kind of gone quiet, funnily enough. But no one complained about it. No one said, oh, this is terrible, I'm not buying a Model Y, because EVs are still brilliant fun. Model Y's got so much torque, and you know, when you put your foot down, you get to where you want to go. And so I was asking you how much you rate performance. Well, Raj Badwell says, 0-60 miles an hour was never a factor for me until I got my Model 3 long range. I love the car, but the low seating and bad boot access made the Model 3 really hard to live with. So I started looking at other options. I looked at the EV6, Ioniq 5 and Škoda Enyaq, and they all felt too slow. I'm no boy racer or F1 racer, but I've got used to that Tesla power and didn't even realise it. Pulling out of junctions and merging onto motorways is effortless. I very nearly got the Enyaq, as I do love the space and seats, but the Model Y became available, so I ordered that. Instead, it ticked all the boxes. I actually prefer the Enyaq design, he says. But don't tell the Tesla fans I said that. But supercharging network and Tesla tech wins hands down. So yeah, I know what you mean. That Tesla performance is, I would describe it as addictive at times. Rajiv Narayan says, part of what makes an EV fun to drive for me is the performance. I love the instant torque, and the 0-60 time of 6 seconds or better is my preference. I don't need sub 3 seconds 0-60 time. That being said, there are still a lot of EV skeptics out there, and so I think given EVs good performance goes a long way towards the widespread acceptance that EVs are better and more fun. Completely agree, Rajiv. Yeah, absolutely. It's about what Elon Musk calls that smackdown to the combustion car fans. Todd Oakes via Twitter sent me a message saying, question of the week, well, all EVs perform much better than ICE cars, so it's not really an issue. But when choosing an EV, I will look for comfort, good charging speed, and enough range for my commute. And Todd, not particularly fussed with performance. I think whatever EV you buy, you're going to get great performance. And I'm thinking about some of the slower EVs out there. Look, I've owned two Renault Zoes. Neither of those can be described as fast. But yeah, I still burn through front tyres on those because having an EV is fun, right? Jasper says, my wife and I used to be on very opposite sides of the spectrum with regards to vehicle performance. I like the ability to feel the road and let the car push you back in the seat on occasion. But my wife gets massively car sick, says Jasper. This has regulated us to the softer side of suspensions, as well as cars that sit taller and have more visibility. Over time, I lost my appetite for speed, and now I enjoy a comfortable drive more, so long as I still have enough power to overtake when it's needed. I'm definitely looking forward to when electric cars don't have to all be supercars and the price can go down. Finally, well, there's no tracks near me, says Jasper, to put it to the test anyway. I still see various people racing on the highway, but now I've got the kids in the car. Safety and reliability are paramount. And that's a really interesting point, Jasper. It's something that I've thought quite a lot about lately. What with the Model Y coming on the market for 55 grand and 65 grand for long range and performance, respectively here. Of course, we have a 20% VAT tax on it anyway, so that is the price that you pay. But still, that is an exceptional amount of money if you want an SUV with lots of space. Now, I drove the Model Y left-hand drive, German version, recently. And then when the right-hand drive version came out yesterday, I was driving that as well because they were the handover event at Southampton Docks. And the one thing that, you know, everybody says about the Model Y, and I'd kind of thought, yeah, I know that. But it brought it back to me. The ride is terrible. The ride is built for sport. And sure, if you want to drive your car, your Model Y, aggressively and have some fun with it, because it's got so much capability, that's what Tesla tuned the suspension for on the Model Y. But even after 10, 15 minutes of driving on some pretty rough roads over here, I wasn't on the motorways and stuff, I'm like, man, this is a real bone shaker. I couldn't live with the Model Y in this setting. I'd want it a little bit softer. And that got me thinking. I'm by far from having one foot in the grave, but unlike you now, I would like something like, if I'm spending 55 or 65 grand, I would compare it to, well, a car off the top of my head, the Jaguar I-Pace. You can get a used one of those, a couple of years old, for 55 grand, not done too many miles. And that car is just going to absolutely cosset you in luxury. And yet, the I-Pace is still very, very quick, very rapid, tons of performance, and certainly is a premium vehicle. In a way that the Model Y isn't a premium vehicle. Model Y is exceptional for many reasons, but it does not feel like you've just spent £55,000 out of your bank account. I would argue the I-Pace does. And that's just one example. I think I'm with you on that, actually, Jasper. As long as the car's got enough, then yeah, I think I'm a little bit more about luxury and premium and just stuff like that these days. But saying that, if somebody would like to park a Model Y on my driveway, I wouldn't say no. Thomas says, most of the cars I own have been kind of slow, like 8 seconds to get to a 60 miles an hour, 100 kilometers an hour, like a slow and reliable 2 litre diesel. And it's more than enough for me. But when my colleague bought one of the early Model X's, okay, and it was a Model X 100D, he let me have a try, says Thomas. It was a rocket. I haven't experienced anything of sorts in my life, especially when you don't expect it from a big SUV. I agree. Even a P90D or something like a Model S, that level of performance and up, just, it can, you know, several launches can start to make you feel a bit sick. That's before you get into plaid territory. I totally agree. He said, then I went back to my slow diesel. Performance Teslas are out of my pocket. Until a few years ago, I bought a Model 3 long range, and it's addictive. I changed the Model 3 to the Audi Q4 e-tron, and it's fine, but I was spoiled. The Audi is too slow. Really, Thomas? Like the but the Audi Q4 e-tron 50 is 6.2 seconds. That's too slow for you? Okay. I don't need the performance 90% of the time. I don't need performance as I can't drive fast on the highways. I have a toddler in the back, and I'm a responsible father. But yes, if there's a stretch of straight road where the speed limit goes from 40 to 60 and I'm approaching the sign and bam, you know, he misses that performance. There are situations when you need those horsepowers, like when you overtake somebody. That's why, Thomas says, I've decided to order a Model Y performance. I'm a boy in a middle-aged man's body. No, not at all, Thomas. That is an exceptional vehicle that you've got on order. LT says, Dear Martin, I have a Tesla Model 3 performance. 3 seconds, 0 to 60. I've mashed the accelerator a few times for the fun of it. My last vehicle was 0 to 60 in 7 seconds. But it's gotten old, he says. If my next vehicle did 5 seconds, it would be fine. Thank you very much, LT, for sending me that email. And it's interesting, actually, isn't it, how people like to play with it a few times, and then, you know, I don't need to do 0 to 60 in 3-4 seconds. I know everyone's different, but it is fun though. It does put a smile. If it's safe to do so, it does put a big smile on your face. It's like being on a roller coaster whilst you're driving your car. Nick Christen says, performance does not impact my buying decisions. Range is the biggest concern. I broached the idea of an EV as a third car for when I'm doing errands with only one or two kids, and it just wasn't an option, he said, because of range. And yes, long-term listeners will know my often used refrain on this show. My ideal Tesla is always, if they were to sell it, the long-range rear-wheel drive version. And obviously they've done versions of that in Model 3 over the years, Model Y as well. It comes and goes in various markets. But if ever I'm able to get that, that would be my ideal Tesla spec, because the weather is bad here 2 weeks of the year. And so, yeah, just don't go out in the snow. I don't need four-wheel drive. I don't need to carry the weight around of two motors, even if it can decouple the front one and run efficiently, etc., etc. I just need a really efficient rear-wheel drive EV that does the best possible range for the battery pack that you've put in it. Yeah, absolutely. I'm all about the range. Right, coming up on the podcast very soon, we'll hear from Mike and also some of your follow-ups, and we'll do our Patreon thanks. Stick around. And, of course, we'll set a brand new question of the week in a moment. Now, Mike says, after 3 years, almost 3 years, with an all-wheel drive Model 3, it clearly has the acceleration capability my wife, who is the owner, she never uses, and she would never miss. I've enjoyed the acceleration occasionally, says Mike, when overtaking, but it could be a lot less without causing any pain. So we'd not rate acceleration very high for our next EV, he says. And Jean-Francois de Montroussin says, I would have rated it next to last before 2019, before the purchase of my SR Plus Model 3. And it made me understand why so many people value it. I have since upgraded to a 2021 SR Plus, and I now have a 2022 LFP on order. What are we calling those cars, by the way, Jean-Francois? Is it the 2022, do we just call it Model 3, or do we still call it SR Plus? What do you want to call it? Or do we call it Model 3 LFP? I don't know, because it's not technically an SR Plus anymore, is it? Anyway, I'm nitpicking. He says, despite loving the performance, you can see it still isn't a priority for me as long as the electric torque remains under 7 seconds, 0-60. P.S. You can call me JF. Okay, JF, thank you very much. And actually, he sent me some really, really interesting things about Canadian incentives and financial considerations when buying an EV, which I really appreciate because, you know, I am one person sitting here in the UK, and as much as I try and understand, this podcast is I always aim it to be a global podcast that endorses electric vehicles and promotes the move to electric mobility. And I always wanted to have a global perspective, and I always want to praise where I can and criticize where I feel it's needed. And I want to champion zero emission mobility around the world, but I can't often know everything that's going on. So JF sent me some brilliant information about the Canadian incentive structure and how some EV buyers are actually finding themselves in a situation of selling their old EVs and making a profit on them after a year or more of having them. Now, a couple of follow-ups, actually, from the last show. We were talking about charging networks, and David Allen emailed, and we were talking about the federal money that's coming to put those chargers into the US. And I was saying, well, is it better for private companies to do it? Is it better for states to operate them as a public utility? David Allen says, unfortunately, the states are mostly unreliable players in building charging infrastructure since red states reject, in many of them, even the concept of electric vehicles. They might spend the money, but they might do so in a manner that rewards even politically connected cronies while sabotaging the long-term intent of the intent of the spending. Seems to me the only group who would do a good job of building a charging network are the people who will benefit most from selling the product. That would be electrons. Therefore, get the electric utilities to build out EV charging networks. Someone creating a charging network must acquire land and pay staggering fees for the power connection. But what if the power connection is done by, well, you, the power network? Utilities own a lot of land. Utilities have the right of way on their land. Utilities are the ones that can reduce the cost to themselves for making those high voltage connections. They have the staff to build, install, maintain the equipment. They have the profit motive to keep the equipment working. If the equipment isn't working, they're not selling electrons. That's their business. They could set up a charging network so that it's using, it was actually billing to your home account, simplifying the accounting. Yeah, David, if you didn't know, here we have Octopus Energy. And although they don't, and they're not, like you said, they're not like a grid provider, they are more of an energy billing company that sits on top of the grid, if I can explain it that way. That's what they've got. They've got a little RFID card that they sent me in the post. They've done deals with charging networks, and we have many, many charging networks over here, more so than the US, where the high-powered charging networks are really Electrify America, to be honest. And they've done multiple deals, and many of them, like Ionity, I can just turn up to, wave the RFID card from my electricity provider, and it goes onto my home billing account. And I don't mind that at all, because it puts all of my energy cost, my energy usage, in one place, in one bill. So whether I'm boiling the kettle, or having a shower, or using my electric car to drive somewhere, it's all, in my mind, an energy cost. And actually, it does make you think differently about what you spend on energy, and your impact on the planet as well. Dave Johnson gives me a follow-up on Tesla recalls, because I was saying on the podcast, I'm not sure about, I understand the legal term recall and why if a vehicle is faulty, even if the software is faulty, it should be noted down on a ledger somewhere as a recall so that there somebody could, an owner of a vehicle could go somewhere and say, does my car have this fixed? Like, is the software version fixed? I get why you have to make it an official recall, but calling Tesla recalls, I put a question mark to the audience, to you. I wasn't sure they should use that word. And he said, Dave Johnson says, people are asking with Tesla if they're being singled out for certain reasons. I think it's simply a victim of being their own, you know, of their own success. Businesses always face greater scrutiny as their products installed base begins to grow, commensurate with safety concerns associated with the project. Cars are obviously deadly products if they fail or misused. 1 million cars with a rare safety defect are different from 10,000 cars with that defect. And there's a reason why big companies adopt, as a company gets bigger, a large company can adopt sometimes slower, sometimes more methodical approaches to introducing a product and updating a product. That is, they have financial and other risks involved if they make a mistake. And doing so in a high-volume manufacturing context makes the risks larger, says Dave. Much as Tesla has influenced the automobile industry, so too must Tesla understand that it has a greater responsibility with regard to safety and compliance of its products as it has graduated from being a boutique producer to the mass manufacturer. Yeah, I think it's growing pains as well. I agree with you, Dave. I think it is some growing pains at Tesla as well. I think they are desperate to be seen as the plucky startup. I know Elon Musk is desperate to be seen as just another one of the guys on Twitter, just the way he tweets. He's clearly not. He lives in a different universe to you and I in terms of his wealth and how people treat him and what he can do within organizations, the power he wields, etc. And so he's clearly not living the same life that with the rest of us lead, or he's desperate to pass himself off as one of the guys, I guess. But also Tesla as well, like, they still, I think, want that reputation of being the plucky startup, and that gets them out of trouble many times. And it's going to be growing pains because they are going to have to do a shift at some point from being the challenger, the disruptor, to becoming the establishment. Like, they will be the establishment when they are that big. And I think that they're not there yet. And they're hanging on to their old reputation because it gets them out of trouble sometimes. But you're absolutely right, Dave. The bigger you get, the more you're going to have to behave in a socially responsible way or suffer the consequences of playing by those rules. I know that many Tesla fans are upset at Germany not being open yet. They decided to do business in Germany. Like, they know what it's like. They bought Grohmann years ago. They know what it's like to operate a business in Germany. They decided to do that because that was the best place to put it. But if you're going to play the game, you've got to play by the rules. And they don't like the rules that Germany are currently imposing. And that delay of Tesla Berlin. So it is hard. It's really hard for Tesla. I totally agree with you. Some great feedback, actually. I love this. I love the conversation with you guys because it makes me think, challenges me. Hopefully we have a good conversation on this show, and I really appreciate all the feedback that you send to the email address hello@evnewsdaily.com. Well, a brand new question of the week right now with emobilitynorway.com. It's a really simple one this week because there's been some cracking looking cars coming out lately. I want to know from you, what's the best looking EV on the market right now? Let's do a poll. What's the best looking EV on the market right now? Email me hello@evnewsdaily.com. Thanks so much to everyone who supports on Patreon, our premium partners, Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, National Car Charging on the US mainland, and Aloha Charge in Hawaii, Derek Riley from the EV Review Island YouTube channel, Richard at rsev.co.uk for buying and selling EVs in the UK, and emobilitynorway.com. Hi to our partners David and Lisa Allen. Hi to Bob Boothby from the Millbrook Cottages, their five-star gold self-catering cottages down in Devon. Hi to Jukka Kukkonen from shift2electric.com with a number 2. Rajiv Narayan, one of our partners, Michael Lumley, and you can get your battery reports for EVs at recurrentauto.com. If you've used recurrentauto.com, check out, what you think of Recurrent's service and the battery reports they provide. Hi to our executive producers, Adam Bruton, Adrian Bond, Alan Shedd, Alex Banahini, Alexander Frank, Anders Hove, Andrea Jefferson, Andy Nancaro and Lillian Cass, Asir Khalid, Bjard Fuchstad, Bill Calhoun, Blaine McKinney, Blunderbuss Jones, Brian O'Leary, Brian Thompson, Bruce Bohannon, Chad Lane, Charles Hall, Christopher Bath, Colin Hennessy and Cam ZV, Craig Rogers, David Dysart, David Finch, David Partington, David Prescott, DCEV and Don McAllister at screencastsonline.com. Hi to Ed Cortine, Eddie Ragassa, Eru Kinyi Nyombi, Eric Hansen, Frederick Rovick, Gene Rubin, George Tortorolo. Hi to Granton Smith, Heinrich Leisner, Ian Griffiths and Ian Waddy Watkins. Hi to Ian Sear, Jacob Kuhn, Jack Oakley, James Storr, Javier Camelo, Diaz Perez, Jim Morris, John Schroeder, John Vandervoort, John who is bidding the beard face at Ken TV's, John Manchak, Juan Gonzalez, Kevin Merson, Kester Sandback, Lawrence D. Allen, Lee Brown, Lee Cully, Marcel Ward, Mark Richards, Marty Young, Matty Yukimo, Mike Winton, Mike Wise, Nathan Gore-Brown, Nathan King, Nathaniel Friedman and Neely Roberts from Sussex EVs. Ohad Aston, Paul Stevenson, Pete Bremmy, Pete Glass, Pete Gordon, Peter and D. Roberts and Peter Reiner, Phil Mouchet, Philip Troutman, Raj Badwell, Raymond Rowledge, Realtor's Choice Photography, Rene Kimick, Rob from the RS Thinks EV channel on YouTube, Robbie NY, Robert Grace, Ron Fisher, Rupert Mitchell, Psyche Payne, Stephen Penn, Steve John, Thomas Cook, Thomas JTS, Timothy Phillips, Todd Oakes, Tyler Voss and my buddy Colin, the Plug Seekers EV YouTube channel. Have a good and see you tomorrow. And remember, there's no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.